Good evening, members, and welcome to the meeting of the Community Regeneration Scrutiny Committee on the 3rd of October 2022. For the purpose of the recording, apart from members of the committee, we have present with us today Tom Deary, the Interim Head of Regeneration. We have Monica Henchcliffe from Democratic Services. We have Daniel Arnold, Programme and Transformation Team Leader, and Kelly Kurth-Dalworth, Enterprise Manager. And we also have Councillor Mike Metcalfe, who is Chair of the Business Springboard Boost Job Fairs. Okay, so without further ado, item number one is to receive apologies for absence, Monica.
Apologies from Councillor Gould and Councillor Grosvenor.
Okay, we are a couple of members absent from tonight's meeting. They may come in between, so we'll just record the time that they appear. If not, we'll just have to put them down as absent without apologies, if that's okay. All right, then, item number two is declarations of interest. Are there any in the room? No, thank you, members. Item number three is the minutes of the meeting on the 4th of July 2022. These have been previously circulated. Are there any questions from those minutes? And if not, I'd like to propose that they are a true record. Could I have a seconder, please? Councillor Brady. And all those in favour. And that's duly carried. Thank you. Item number four is to consider any urgent business brought forward to the meeting under Rule 12. Monica?
So no urgent business, Chairman.
Thank you so much. And item number five is the presentation regarding the jobs fair and business grants. So I invite Kelly to present this to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. So we've been asked to deliver a presentation on two areas that our team lead on, the Business Springboard Boost Scheme and the Job Fairs. So just start with the Business Springboard Boost. So this was launched in the 2021-2022 financial year, and a second allocation began in 2022-2023. It was an allocation of £200,000 over the two-year period. So businesses can apply for funding from between £500 to £10,000, and we allow both new businesses and existing businesses to apply for that. New businesses can apply up to £5,000 and existing businesses up to £10,000. So far we've had 118 businesses inquire about the fund, and that's for both allocations. So 72 in round one and 46 to date in round two. Full and valid applications have been received from 20 businesses in round one and 9 to date in round two. So when we say that, with the application forms available online, so we find that quite a few businesses have put their application in but not the supporting documentation, so that they're not, we've not got enough information to take them forward. So 13 businesses were successful in round one, and 8 so far have been successful in round two. 65% of businesses were therefore successful in round one, and so far 89% in round two. 8 applications so far in this round have been incomplete. So in terms of the council's return on investment, the way the scheme works is businesses have to put some of their own money into the projects that they've identified. So what we do is calculate the amount of private sector investment that's been brought in from that, really. And as you can see, £421,775 of private sector investment has been matched with the £159,565 investment from ESBC to date. The total project costs were £581,340. And so for every £1 of grant, £2.64 of private sector investment has been brought in. So this is one of the strongest returns on investment in recent grant schemes. So we've asked for a range of outcomes from different businesses, from job creation and safeguarding jobs through to supporting local community groups. So some specific examples, we had HFE Signs that were successful this year, and they've actually already recruited a designer as a result of the investment that was made. Baggy Boys are very clear that they, we funded a website development for them and some marketing support, and they already have seen an increase in sales due to that investment. And Ashes Memorial Jewellery were really positive about the grant, actually, and they had an increase in sales as a direct result of the new marketing campaign, part funded by ESBC, and they also appointed a new member of staff as a result. So it's had some really positive impacts. Just to give you a couple of specific examples, so Acorn Training, they brought a disused building back to life. They're now housed in the old Burton Mail offices opposite Worthington Walk. They upskilled local residents, and that was 166 residents supported as of February 2022. So the money that we funded for them was the fit out of their new premises in Burton. So had we not helped them, they wouldn't have come into Burton at that time. They might have come later on, but it wouldn't have happened as quickly. And that's resulted in 30 learning outcomes, including one in customer service, a level one in health and social care, and a forklift truck licence. And there's some photos of the opening that Councillor Ackroyd attended. And you can see the sort of fit out of the offices there as well. A couple of other businesses we supported was a Privilege Bar and Restaurant in Uttoxeter and number 42 Interiors in Uttoxeter. So the one in the middle and the left is Privilege, and then number 42 we helped with some branding and again some website support as well for number 42. So yeah, they're both doing well. So in terms of the panel, the way the application works is we get the application and get the supporting documentation in, check if it's eligible, and if everything's provided, it goes forward to the panel. We do make suggestions as to what we think about the application, but the decision's made by the panel. And the panel consists of councillors, business reps and council officers from the enterprise team. Decisions are made on the strength of the project, the potential outcomes, the level of risk of supporting the project. So one of the things we ask for is a financial summary from accountants at East Attleborough Council, and that helps to inform the decision. And we also do other internal checks as well, so with business rates, health and safety, environmental health, to see if legal, to see if there's any issues that we're aware of as a council. So the next panel meeting's this Thursday, with five applications to take forward, although since I did this presentation, one of them hasn't submitted enough information, so we're looking at four at the moment for that. There is now 39,450 left in this allocation. And that's not including the four going forward on Thursday. If the four going forward on Thursday is successful, it's round about 16,000 that we'll have left. So the second part of the presentation is around the jobs fairs. So the job fairs are led by Job Centre Plus and supported by a partnership. So we're called the Way to Work Partnership now, and that consists of Burton and South Derbyshire College, Burton Albion Community Trust, Trent and Dove Housing, South Derbyshire District Council, Staffordshire Chamber of Commerce and Sharp's Pottery Museum. So the job fairs have been delivered for over 10 years now. And although there's a lot of work involved in them, it's a process that's kind of well-oiled, if you like, and they are successful job fairs, and it kind of always goes to plan, really. So that, on average, we look at four jobs fairs to be held annually. So ESBC contributes to the venue costs, and the venues for the fairs are rotated between Burton and South Derbyshire College, Burton Market Hall and Burton Town Hall. So throughout the height of the COVID pandemic, more virtual and bespoke jobs fairs were held, and this year in-person events have been held. So the Town Hall event was held in June this year, and that was one of the best attended events that we've seen. There was a lot of employers there. I think we had the maximum number of employers we could fit in, and a really high number of job seekers as well, the 501 job seekers throughout the morning, because they run from 9:30 till 12:30, so it's quite a lot in that sort of 3-hour period. We asked for feedback from employers and 322 of those recorded positive actions. On the day itself, 107 job seekers left with an interview secured, 193 application forms were completed and 22 job offers were made on the day. So as I say, we asked for feedback from employers and 92% rated the event as good. 84% of job seekers recorded the event as very good or excellent. And they are quite typical ratings for the job fairs. We always get good feedback. So some comments from job seekers there. So people working at the jobs fair have been extremely informative and helped me find my way around. Useful information regarding start-up for self-employment. I've discovered that a lot of employers are willing to work around single parents who struggle with covering school hours. People are easy to talk to, and there's a various range of companies that were there on the day. And that's everything. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Kelly. I've got a variety of questions that I'd like either to ask yourself or Mike, if I may, but I'll just put it out to the floor first. Do we have any questions? First, we'll go on to the Springboard Boost first, and then we'll move on to the Jobs Fair. Do I have any questions? Sorry. Councillor Jones.
What was the average grant that we awarded, or we have awarded so far? You might have had that in all those numbers, but I don't remember seeing it.
No, I didn't have the average in there. I can find that out for you.
Now, I want to just sort of round what is it for a business that your maximum grant is £10,000. What are you getting near to the £10,000?
No,
it
I would...
can't be, because otherwise your money...
Yeah, no, I would say on average it's under the £5,000. Requested,
average.
Yeah. We've had a couple for 10,000, but generally it's the smaller amount.
And what do people ask for a fixed amount? Do they ask for £10,000 and they get some percentage of it, or do they ask for £5,000 and that's what they get?
Yeah, it's on a case-by-case basis. Okay. We have had a few this year that have asked for more than they've been awarded, so that's kind of down to the panel's decision. But it can be, you know, if they feel they don't need the full allocation, or they're not entirely sure whether it is going to support the outcomes, then they'll reduce the amount of grant requested.
Okay, thanks. There was something else, I think. That's the two. It is on. It says it's on.
Oh, yeah.
It says it's on down there.
Yeah, okay, that's fine.
The £200,000, that's presumably capital.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And do we see that going forward? Or is, you know, do we have, at the end of the second year, is that going to come to an end, we think? Or is there any plans for anything forward of that yet?
Yep. If I may take that one, Chair. That expires this year, Councillor, but there is a proposal in the UKSPF bid to do two more years of £100,000 each from next April, if that's approved.
Okay, thanks very much. Thank you. And can I just ask one other question on the jobs fair?
Can we come back to the jobs
fair? Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
We'll do the boost grant first. If I could just ask, obviously Jackie's mentioned the one with regard to taking this further into a third strand, which is great that you've got that proposal on the table. In terms of the applicants coming forward, do they present that to the panel themselves, which obviously makes it a more passionate project for them? That's really good to know.
Yes, they do.
Right, okay. And then also, how often do the panel actually meet?
So we try to meet the first Thursday of the month every 4 weeks. We've not had a panel for a couple of months now because of holidays and leave and whatnot. So this is the first one we've had in it, which is why we've got five, or did have five, going forward.
Okay. And my last question is, if the application wasn't successful, are you able to support the applicants in signposting them where they possibly could get other strands of funding from, or do you sort of encourage them to reapply again?
I think, it depends on their application and what they've requested. We do provide feedback where it's asked for from businesses in terms of what might be missing or what they could do differently next time. With the council scheme, we do allow retail businesses and, you know, A lot of other schemes that are available only allow businesses that work on a majority business-to-customer base, business-to-business basis. So sometimes there's not many more avenues they could go to if they're not successful with our scheme. But we have had a couple that the panel have actually said, come back to us once you've worked up your idea a bit more and we'll review it again.
So they can reapply? Do they have to wait a certain period before they do that? Or
they can reapply if unsuccessful, and if the panel agree that they can come back and put another application in. Within the same allocation, we wouldn't have successful businesses reapplying. But for separate allocations, I think we have said that that is allowed.
Okay. Are there any other questions? Councillor Beach. Sorry.
Thank you, Chair. Overall, fantastic. Like, that was really, really nice to see a couple of familiar places succeeding and we've contributed, and that's brilliant. I just wondered, to play the other side of the coin, have there been any negatives to it? To the process, to the scheme, to the, I don't know, the way we've put it out or the way we've been receiving applications, have there been any flaws or any non-success stories where perhaps money's been granted and yet there wasn't the outcome we'd hoped for? Where could we have provided advice to go with it, perhaps just expanding on what's already there?
Yeah, I think, I don't know if it's really a negative, but we did have an application from a business that was thinking of moving into Burton, and they were successful, but then couldn't move in the end. Something happened and the lease fell through. But then, thankfully, they found another property and did end up coming into Burton within 12 months, and we were able to ask them to come back to the panel meeting, and they reapplied and were successful. I think one of the things that businesses do say is there's an awful lot of information that they have to submit. So we did try and reduce the amount of information that needs to come in and reduce the application form. But ultimately, we need those kind of checks and balances. We need all the financial information to be able, because it is public money, obviously, and we need to be confident that we're supporting a business that can support itself, I suppose. Yeah.
I think so far they're all succeeding, aren't they?
Yes, yeah. So what we do is we do go back to the businesses and ask for progress reports. So when they submit their claims, they submit a progress report to see how they're getting on. And we have said, sort of within a 12-month window, we go back and take photographs and see how they're getting on. And if it's a capital piece of equipment, we'll take photos of the serial number as well, so we can be confident that, you know, we go back in 12 months again and it's the same machine. Yeah.
Councillor Brady.
Yeah, I was just wondering, is this all for like more established? So the business, how old does the business have to be? How long does it have to be established? One. And also, does this help like for new starters in businesses as well? How do they go about with so much information of what you need sometimes to get the grant or to help in the start-up of a business? So I was just wondering the difference between the two. Do you have, is it more of a start-up, or are they the majority of businesses that have been going for a while and just need that extra help?
Yeah. No, we have had a few new business start-ups, so it is aimed at new business start-ups as well as existing. What we do stipulate is that the business needs to have had support from a support organisation, and one that we funded is Enterprise for Success, which is delivered by Blue Orchid. So that's delivered to businesses in our area, and they will help. So a business can go to them, or an entrepreneur with a new idea, and then Enterprise for Success help them put together a business plan, cash flow forecast, a lot of what we need for our fund. So we do stipulate they need to have had that support first, but they're still technically new business, quite, you know, pretty new businesses. I can't think offhand how many. I know when we first launched April Time, it seemed we were having a new startup at every panel meeting. So we have had quite a few new business startups.
Yeah, I think some of them as well were helping them move from like kitchen tables to proper premises.
Yeah.
Sorry, Councillor Jones.
Where do we publish the good news stories?
We do press releases. We have done press releases after we've been able to award the money, so we do try and do that. We have had case studies on our website in the past as well with the successful businesses. We haven't done an awful lot of that this year, if I'm honest. We could get better at that and do more to publish it.
I think that's something we do sort of fall down in all sorts of across the board completely, that we don't publicise the good stuff and good work that we do. And I think we maybe ought to be trying to look at doing that a bit more with some all sorts of areas that we do, with open spaces, with business improvements and what have you. There are lots and lots of things that we could actually try and get branding points
for. Yeah.
I think you're absolutely right, Councillor Jones. I think whatever grants we've always done, we've always sort of fallen short of not, you know, sort of celebrating what we've been able to achieve.
Yeah.
Councillor Beach.
Sorry. I was going to add on to that as a suggestion / a comment. Are we allowed to ask the businesses to include the success story as part of their website or media content anywhere? Because, for example, I follow Number 42 on Facebook and Instagram, and I follow Privilege on Facebook and Instagram, but I don't follow ESBC necessarily on Facebook or Instagram as somebody who's 30 and lives in Chopster. One I might have seen and the other I probably wouldn't have. Whether we're allowed to ask them to publish and share that information with us and for us?
Yeah, we're certainly allowed to do it. You know, it's quite common for grants funding schemes to require promotion of fund sources. You see it with things like HLF quite often in larger schemes. I can't recall from memory whether we mandate it in the grant agreement. Possibly not. But that's something we can certainly look at. Again, it wouldn't be a requirement to promote, but rather if you promote, make sure that you mention the council's grant fund would be sort of the way of doing it.
Yeah.
But it's certainly something we can investigate a bit more.
Yeah, I think what we do say is we can use that in our marketing and publicity material, so they can't say no to us promoting it, but I don't think we do it the other way around. So it's a good point, we could do that.
Dan, did you want to comment?
Yeah, just to say that there has been occasions where a business who's received the grant has done some promotion and PR, and we've contributed to that through a comment from the relevant cabinet holder and shared their posts on our social media channels as well. So it does happen, but again, it's another avenue, I think, to promote out the good work that these grants are doing.
I do know that, like, in some of the grants that we've done over the years, there's been a plaque as well that we've probably ESBS supported, especially when we've helped to renovate a building as well that's not being used at the moment. Do we have any more questions about the Springboard grant? No? Then we'll move on to the job fairs questions. I think Councillor Jones, you were...
We did a scrutiny report on job fairs about, I don't know, 8 years ago. It must be at least... Did you do that one as well? And one of the things that we suggested was actually we got together with the MP with their job fair, and we actually looked at combining them and trying to make them on the same day instead of having one on the 21st of September and one on the 22nd of September or something ridiculous, which often happened. Have we actually made any progress in that in 8 years at all? Because I see the MP is still advertising her own jobs fair, and we obviously have our own as well still.
It's an interesting time to ask, actually, because the MP's jobs fair was last week.
Yeah.
And we did actually work together on that one. So the way to work partnership, we were involved in it and did attend it. I attended, other members of the partnership group attended and kind of volunteered and supported people to find the right stand. So this is actually, I think, the first one that we have actually been involved in. So hopefully going forward that will continue.
It's more than just being involved in helping people on the day. It's more actually trying to get something that goes through the whole of the jobs fair sort of programme, really. I would have thought, you know, if the MP is doing one or two a year, I don't know how many they do, we do four, that's six a year. You know, we could actually spread those every 2 months rather than what we do, by making them a bit more, more integrated, I suppose.
I think if I can come in through you, Chair, I think that makes a lot of sense, Councillor Jones. Unfortunately, Kelly's been quite sort of delicate, I suppose, in how she's saying this. The MP wants to be able to say that it's the MP's job fair rather than a partnership job fair, and sort of the politics of it rather can be quite frustrating at times. But we're hoping this is a step in the right direction to working more collaboratively moving forward. But no, you're absolutely right. I think it's a fair point.
I'm happy for her. I'm happy for her to say it's her job fair, one of them, or even two of them, as long as, you know, she can say it's her job fair with the support of the SBC, and we could actually say it's our job fair with the support of the MP. You know, she makes on both ways if you do that, really, rather than, you know, just being sort of isolated into about the thing. Yeah.
Well, I think along with that, though, you've got sponsors that are actually sponsoring her event, and whether it's something that, you know, they would want our involvement in or our name on it, as much as I see what you're saying in terms of supporting one another.
I can't believe anyone would say they did not want
get a lot of sponsorship and funding.
Yeah, but I can't believe that any of the people that support her would actually object to us, particularly if she gets some, you know, if she gets some support at nil cost to herself, really, from our job fairs. But anyway, obviously that's been a difficult one for 8 years, so it's not going to improve next week, is it?
But in terms of the sponsorship for our fair, job fairs, then obviously you mentioned that ESBC contribute to the costing surrounding that, but do we get any sponsorship funding from any of the businesses that actually have a stall here or whatever?
No, I think the stalls are free for employers to attend.
Okay.
So, and it's the job centre that leads on it. But yeah, the stands are free. They lead on trying to get employers to go to the jobs fairs.
Okay, and how many stalls do we actually give to employees? How many can we cater for?
I think at the town hall it was about 48, that's specific, but it's about late 40s.
And split over how many days?
That's just one morning.
Just one morning?
Yeah, so that's half nine till half 12.
Okay.
Yeah. So some people are there for the full 3 hours looking around. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that's quite a short period of time when you think that the MP does it over a week. I don't know what anybody else's comments are on that.
I think the jobs for the MTP was just for a day last week.
Was it?
Yes, but it was longer.
It seemed to be advertising it longer. Yeah,
it was. Okay. It was slightly longer than we usually do. Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Councillor Beach.
I'm curious. I'm asking logistics, so I don't know if you're able to. When we have a jobs fair. Councillor Jones has just said we have about four every year. Do we have the same employers back four times, generally speaking? Do the same employers keep coming back four times a year? Or do we make sure that there's available space for employers who haven't been before? And likewise, does the MP do that? Does the MP have the same employers back again and again, or do we know? Do we keep that information?
I think I'm quite happy to come on that one, Chair. I think you do tend to see a lot of the same employers, and that's certainly not a bad thing, because there's a lot of seasonal work, and I don't just mean sort of Christmas period, but a lot of seasonal work throughout the year. So GI Group, for example, are a regular employer. And then, you know, we also have education providers like the college who are there time in, time out, and similar. But it is, I think it's fair to say, Kelly, more often than not, a good turnover of new employers, because it just depends on, you know, where the vacancies are at the time. But your larger employers, like GI Group, like JCB, they tend to be at the events every time consistently, because they simply just have that volume of vacancy. I don't think we'd be able to comment accurately on the MPs one, it's an annual one rather than a sort of a quarterly one, so it's difficult to sort of compare and contrast.
Okay. Councillor Brady?
Yeah, a few questions. I don't know if you can answer with the job spec. What age group as well, is there a specific age group that goes, or is it can it cater for age group right up to, say, 65? And also, does it cater for, like, people without the education? There's a lot of young people that don't go on to higher education. What jobs are there available for them? Is it apprenticeships that they can go for? But then again, sometimes the apprenticeships, you've got to have high qualifications to get the apprenticeship when, you know, they're not really academic themselves. Type of thing. That's what I'm really asking for, to see if there's when you go to a jobs fair, is it wide ranging for cross of all education, really, not just like sometimes you look at if JCP's there, they're looking for engineers that have been in higher education, ready for an apprenticeship to start. Somebody who's on job seekers that probably hasn't got that education, really going to there, they haven't got the qualifications for to move on forward. And I was just wondering, do you see that? Do you see that a lot, where they can't move forward, or is it mainly it's arranging that people of all education gets a job, can get a job?
Yeah, I think one of the things with the job fairs is job seekers are invited by the work coaches to come along to the jobs fairs. It used to be kind of sanctioned, but it's a bit of a softer approach now. They'll be given a time slot when they can go and have a look around. So in the age range can go up to as much as people want to work, really. I think in terms of the types of jobs, it's probably slightly more leaning towards people with those kind of lower level qualifications. We have started to see more where, you know, kind of higher paid jobs, more education qualifications are required, but I'd say it's more kind of leaning to the other side.
So it's giving people
that
more of a chance.
Yeah, and when we speak to people that have left on the day, you know, I've spoke to people the other day that were really you know, happy what they got out of attending as well. There were jobs there for them, and more opportunities than they thought available. You know, so the MPI, the NHS there, we actually had a stand there as well, and just realising the breadth of opportunities that are out there is quite positive.
Yeah. Okay. I just add to Kelly's answer, Chair. I think the feedback process that is really well managed as well, and fundamental to that process. So when anybody leaves the event, they get somewhat accosted by Kelly or somebody from the JCP saying, "You know, what's your feedback? What did you find of it?" And people might say things like, "Well, there's no jobs for me," and it's not there's no jobs for me, and then they leave. It's they'll get stopped and say, "Well, what are you looking for? What kind of work are you interested in? Next time, we'll make sure there's an employer here who's in that work area," and they're really good at working, you know, through the JCP with the work coaches to make sure that there's a wide breadth of opportunities. Now, they can't guarantee, if somebody says, "Well, I'm a chef, and that's the kind of work I'm looking for," they can't guarantee that they'll get an employer at the next event who does that, but they will try their best to make those connections. So it is tailored as much as possible based on that feedback, as well as making sure that there's that general availability of jobs that are just advertised at that moment in time, bringing it together under one roof. So they do try and take both approaches.
Okay, are there any other further questions? Sorry, Councillor Beach.
I'm sorry. So one of the pieces of data was so many applications were completed on the day and interviews were offered on the day. I'm just wondering, do people sort of go off, take an application and go off and do it if somebody was to seek help completing an application? Is that an option? Do the employers offer that? Do we offer that as hosts? Just for example, obviously reading reams and reams and reams of text isn't everybody's forte, and, you know, completing the right box in block capitals and ballpoint blue ink, some of these things could be quite specific. Are there people around to help, and whose help is it?
No, we don't offer anything in terms of helping with applications. I'm not sure if the job centre does. I'd have to check that.
They do.
Okay.
They do assist with the, yeah, as part of their offer.
Okay. Are there no further questions? Okay, well, thank you very much for joining us tonight, Kelly and Mike.
Thanks, Chair.
All right. Thank you. We'll just have a couple of minutes before they leave, and then we'll move on with the rest of the agenda. Thanks again, guys. Take care. Okay, so we'll push on now with item number 6, which is the performance report quarter 1, and I'll hand over to Dan.
Thank you, Chair. So the purpose of this report is to provide an update at the end of the first quarter of the current financial year towards achieving the community regeneration priority set out in the Council's corporate plan. In total, there are 129 indicators for three corporate priorities. 85 are green, 1 are amber and 2 are red. For the total 129 targets, 42 contribute to the community regeneration priority. And of these 42 targets, 24 are green, 1 is amber, 2 are red and 15 are not yet due to be reported. The full performance information on all the corporate indicators can be seen in Appendix 1. However, a summary of the percentage and number of performance indicators for each priority and cabinet portfolio is shown in Table 2 at paragraph 5.3. And Table 3 at paragraph 5.4 lists the targets that have been given a red or an amber status, and an AMP update has been provided for each target. Over to you, Chair. Happy to take any questions.
Yep. Do we have any questions from members? Councillor Jones.
Can you just remind me of when quarter one is? Is that March, April, May or April, May, June?
April, May, June.
Okay. Just seems by the time we get it, it's pretty much out of date and situations that have changed as far as the reds and ambers hopefully have either caught up or something else has happened. So are you able to give us an update on those?
Perhaps, if you don't mind, hand over to Tom for the update on the two reds, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure. I can't comment on the planning application one, but the two reds I can. So the first one was the regional learning centre proposal. That's now been withdrawn. It was due for September, I believe. Memory serves, I've not got it in front of me. But the delivery partner on that one, Staffordshire University, have now withdrawn, so that project is no longer moving forward with funding. Proposed to be reallocated across the rest of the Towns Fund programme to deal with inflationary pressures. So that project's no longer moving forward and has been marked as off target for the whole year. On the second target, the washrooms project, I think the update on that's probably still accurate if memory serves. There'll be a report coming forward to December Council that will set out how best to now take the project forward with a view to deliver it next year now with a revised budget allocation subject to council approval, obviously. But that will come forward in to December Council. I'm happy to take any questions on either of those in terms of anything wider, but that's sort of the current state of play of those two projects.
Thanks, Tom. Any other questions?
Can anybody say anything about the planning application? Are they caught up? Are they now better staffed so they're able to actually deliver within the 13-week target?
Yeah, I can't provide an answer now, Councillor. I will find out for you and I'll submit a response, circulate a response after the meeting.
The response would be really useful if you could tell me how many smaller ones they delivered within 6 weeks.
Sorry, I missed the first part.
There are two targets, one is 6 weeks for some of the applications that are the relatively smaller ones. And then there's the larger application, which is 13 weeks. If you could get an update on both of those, that would be really useful. Okay. Thanks. I think I'm sure that from the complaints and everything that I get, that's sure of them, the issues that people contact me about their planning applications and the complaints and that, I'm really hoping that we've got it staffed up so it's a bit, it's actually a bit more on target now.
Okay. Any further questions, Councillor Brady? Just put your mic on.
Just on the washlands, with it being off target and that, is that due to mainly, is that more out of our control because prices have skyrocketed, more so gone up, or is it that as a council we underfunded it and not expecting the cost of what it was going to come?
The budget set by council and subsequently cabinet was based on market testing at the time, so it was based on contractors putting forward what their effectively billed quantity prices would be for the specification of work. So it was as informed as it could be for a sort of a bespoke piece of work. On the tender submissions that have come in, there's a lot of risk built into it, a lot of unexpected risk built into it associated with risks around mobilisation, around cost inflations, around sort of various different elements of the contract. So I do think it's a consequence of price increases and risks around that, more so than the original budget being inaccurate as such. But I do think that when the report comes forward to members in December, there'll have to be a greater consideration to contingency within the budget in terms of any potential risk that any potential increase that might happen over the course of the project as well. But I do think it's down to that more so than the budget being sort of wrong at the time.
Councillor James.
There must be a bit of an element of delays in that, because that project was pretty near ready to be looking at going out at the start of this term, 2019. That project was pretty close to being ready to go. So, and you know, we're now in 22, and I know there have been changes to it and what have you, but there must be some issue that over those 3-year delays, costs must have increased. I know there's all sorts of excuses and reasons, but. Yeah, is that an element as well?
Yeah, I can give you a summary of the timeline, actually, if you'd like, Councillor Jones. I've got it to hand because we were looking at it for the December report. But it was April 2020 when Cabinet signed off the final budget following Council's decision in 2019.
It was actually in my budget, the year before that.
Yep.
It was in the budget, wasn't it?
So Council set an overarching budget in 2019, yes. And then Cabinet finalised the budget in 2020. And then, so we then appointed the consultants to work on the management of the tender exercise, and they were appointed in September of 2020. So there was a little bit of a delay there around transfer of liability during COVID, but we got over that. We then had the flooding in the autumn, which delayed some of the on-site investigations. The planning application was submitted in December 2020, and that was then determined in June 21. We then discharged the... It didn't. We then discharged the pre-commencement conditions during August, leading up to February, primarily around the historic environmental management and the bat roosting programme. And then... February onwards is when we've been working through this tender exercise. So that's sort of why the timeline of events. But as you said, prices from 2019 or indeed 2020 are not viable in 2022, quite simply.
Okay. Are there any further questions? All right, then. We will move on to item number 7, which is the Station Street Regeneration Review, and again I will hand over to Dan.
Thank you, Jet. So, members will recall at the previous scrutiny meeting we agreed to take forward a review of the Station Street project. I've sent a few emails out in the period between this meeting and last meeting. I think when we met last time we'd agreed that we'd sign off the scoping paper electronically in order to progress the scrutiny. I've received sort of feedback from one member in terms of contribution to the scoping paper, and the final version of the scoping paper was submitted last week, I believe. So that's where we are, Chair, with the Station Street project. Okay. Street review, sorry.
Thank you. So obviously, as Dan's mentioned, there's been various bits of communication and sent out in terms of the scoping paper, and also to get people's feedback of anything that they want to include on the scoping paper. We really need to get this signed off today, if possible. I've agreed for it to be signed off today, and can I have all members' agreement that we do the same? If we could just have a show of hands that's done. Okay. Obviously, Dan's sending out these emails electronically, so we get some feedback. If and when you can get an email from Dan, if you can respond to it as soon as possible, that would be appreciated. Because obviously, one of the questions now leading on from the three main questions that have been put on the scoping paper is that we send out a survey for stakeholders. Obviously Dan wants to try and put this together now, and looking at the timeline that we've got, we're hoping to hopefully get some questions from ourselves this evening that you can do them. We've reckoned about up to 10 questions to put on the survey. Obviously, it's going to go out to councillors, residents and businesses. This is going to be on our social media platforms. It'll go out on ES News and also on our website for anybody to contribute to. So I think in the first instance, now that we've obviously signed that off, as this is going to be the scoping paper, could I ask for contributions of questions? Hopefully we could get those this evening so that Dan could streamline those. So has anybody got any questions that we'd like to go on the survey?
I think most of the questions are actually in the scoping paper, aren't they?
We could take them from the three main questions that are actually there, but is there any to streamline those down? Can we have some suggestions, Councillor Beach?
I'm being that person, I'm sorry. Do we want to establish from each set of stakeholders the same pieces of information, or are we looking more for a slightly different opinion or some parts of opinions from different members? For example, I think a business owner who doesn't live in Burton but has a shopfront onto Station Street has a very different opinion than somebody who lives in the flat above the shop on Station Street and somebody who lives on the edge of town and comes to Station Street. Their experience of it and their opinion of it as a project as a whole, in my opinion, would be quite different. I think as an individual who could put myself in all three positions, I could quite easily say I'd have a different opinion in that regard than I would in that. Do we want the same information from all three?
I'll let Dan come in on this.
I think if we were to attempt to survey sort of specific people, it'd be very difficult to target them, I think. Okay. I'd perhaps try and establish from the survey response, almost categorise who they are, so you can almost perhaps then form part of the analysis in terms of...
That's more what I'm asking. I'm not serious. I'm more asking the how do we ask the question we're asking in a way that isn't aimed at a certain audience.
Yeah.
Compared, you know, how do they answer? Do we give more open-ended? What sort of information do we think is best to receive? What's easier to analyse, but what gives more information?
Yep.
In terms of, like, you get the quantitative, it's a lot easier to analyse quantitative data.
It's a lot easier to analyse quantitative data than it is qualitative, but you get an awful lot more out of qualitative data where people are giving you words and opinions.
Mm. I mean, in terms of the question, sorry.
50-50 them.
I mean, in terms of the questions, obviously, as committees, what you want to see. In terms of analysis, you know, there's ways in which we can analyse both quantitative and qualitative information. You know, we can, patterns, word patterns, there's a certain themes that are coming out from the qualitative responses. Okay. We can analyse it that way as well. So there's different ways in which we can do both. So I think, in my view, a mixture of both would be probably the best way to go.
Okay. Councillor Brady.
I think it's actually in the scope of some of the questions anyway, but we looked at Station Street at the time with the improvement in the shop frontage that it would improve footfall and business take up. Is there any way, like asking businesses really, has that improvement worked? I think it's in there in a roundabout way actually about did the project deliver, I think it's in one of the questions, but also I'd like to know if really the whole idea was to bring businesses into Burton and to improve that area. It would be to see if it actually has, if the businesses have seen an uptake in their takings or anything like that, if it's improved them.
Okay. Any other questions? I mean, obviously, Councillor Beach has mentioned residents within Station Street. So we could actually ask them a question in terms of has that it affected the footfall? Have they had further disruption, perhaps, because of the, you know, how it's been enhanced, and you know, some, or is it, you know, is it aesthetically more pleasing to live in that area now?
Are there actually many residents in Station Street? Up above the, there's quite a lot of those places that are still empty, aren't they? Above the basic shops.
The shop, but I know when people live there, and I know they're always out to vote too, because there's a lot of residential renting.
Okay. Any others? Dan, sorry.
Okay, so the committee would like to get that input, that feedback from business owners on that Station Street, but also the residents as well. So I suppose there's probably have to be some sort of element of targeting, making sure we sort of engage with those businesses and those residents. So whether that's actually physically posting a letter out or posting a survey out or going handing something to them, because I think it's key, I suppose, to try and get some sort of engagement and response from those people, as well as the general population, the general businesses within the town centre.
Councillor Beach. Oh, sorry.
I think, just reading them through again, I think Councillor Jones is right. The general gist of the answers we want is in the questions, in the three, within, if you broke those questions down, it's there. It's just whether that information then gives us the answers we're going to need to establish what we want to establish from it. For example, can you ask a business owner whether the project has provided value for money? Surely that's what we're trying to determine based on their opinions of it.
That's a councillor question.
Yeah. So what are we asking the businesses? So are we asking the business, since the project, has the value of your property, if the property's owned, has the value of your property increased or decreased? Are we asking whether we've made a positive financial contribution to the area as a whole? I think I'm asking for myself. I'm not suggesting a question. I'm asking what we're trying to ask.
I'll just very quickly clarify on that. I think there are certain things you can do on a desktop basis, but it would be very difficult for us to attribute, if the property price has increased, that it's as a result of this project. I think it'd be quite a tenuous link. That's the sort of challenge with that kind of questioning.
And what I need to establish as well is, are we looking to do a survey or more than one survey where it's directed at councillors, businesses, residents? Councillor Jones.
Personally, I think you have to do three. Councillors will be asked completely quite different questions because they have more information and what have you. But I think as far as the businesses are concerned, I would have thought we wanted to see if there was an improvement in footfall, if they themselves had actually seen any upturn in other lettings around their area, because there are a huge number of empty properties down Station Street. But we can also get that information, presumably, from valuation. Yeah, that isn't totally reliant on just asking people, but it'd be interesting to ask to get their perception of whether that has done. And it would also be one of the questions to ask is that if they themselves have made any improvements to their own shop frontages, because that was one of the objectives, was that we actually got the shop frontages to actually do some work to their own buildings to make them look more attractive, because they were pretty run down at the time. So those are the sort of things I think we can be asking the businesses. But you can also ask some of the residents whether they perceive there's been any improvement in shop frontages over the time as well, to see, and whether the residents perceive there to be any increase in lettings down there at all. I don't actually know what the facts are.
So if we did three surveys, sort of total number of questions should be looking for each survey. Are we looking around four questions for each, or
I think you probably have a few more than four.
Yeah.
I'd say. I suppose when we're talking about the number of questions, it's more making the survey less onerous for people to complete. So, if we're talking different people, they're sort of three separate surveys. So I think 10 again would be sort of a rule of thumb potentially.
Because there are some that we can cross over anyway each other's. Councillor Brady.
Yeah, sorry. Also, I don't know if this could be like for residents or businesses. Originally, when we took out all the trees and the seating area, it was to stop a lot of the antisocial and people loitering around.
And it would be interesting to see now we've put it all back in as well, if any of the residents or anybody had seen more, I don't know, not so much antisocial behaviour, but more of the laundering of how it was, where they're sitting and they're taking that it was about, if putting it all back in, we've created another that problem again, is what I'm trying to say, is if we can look at that, I don't know. If we can, well, if it's important, really.
And that, like you say, could go to residents that live on Station Street, it can go to businesses, and yeah, it can get it like could literally fall into all three as well. I think, in terms of one of the things that's mentioned in the three main questions about providing the value for money with a design that will look good in 10 years' time, I think that was probably the way they were looking at, but is that going to be good in 10 years' time? So, again, we could possibly add that into the same question, rather than just keep reiterating ourselves. Any other questions? Councillor Beach.
Sorry,
that's fine.
Sorry.
Tom.
Sorry, Chair, not to steer the questions you're asking at all, but if I could suggest that on the business survey you ask when they moved to Station Street, because you might be useful to do a comparison between those that moved there after the project and those who might have been there longer, who can give a bigger flavour for, you know, actually, you know, maybe it's nice, but actually 5 years ago it was just as vibrant, or so forth and so forth. So putting some context to the occupancy might be helpful to the data.
And that again could be addressed to new residents.
Yeah.
Okay. One of the other things that could also be mentioned is, have we seen more shops closed due to it, you know, it being a little bit too expensive to shop down there? I don't know, you know, whether it's become such a nice area that people don't feel like, in case the landlords increase the rent for the residents as well. Sorry, Councillor Beach. So what I think we should do, because we could be pondering over this for quite some time, I think, Dan, you've got a good start and some of the questions you want to split over the three surveys. If we can send out an email to members, especially those that aren't here with us this evening, explain to them what we're going to do. And I think if we give a timeline of, say, by the end of next week, which is the 10th, the 14th, well, you'll have to do yours before then, Laura. You've got a couple of days. if this can go out, if questions can come back, and then you can sort of cherry pick the ones that we can put in each of those different surveys, and then possibly get Dan and the team to look at the questions, send those questions out to the team here to make sure that we're all in agreement with those before they actually go live on all the different platforms. Councillor Jones.
Could I suggest that you actually put a few brief questions in there, the ones that we've discussed already?
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, it's always much easier for people to respond when they see something rather than starting the clean piece of paper. And you're obviously getting a massive amount of response to your emails that you're sending out. So,
or not.
That might encourage something.
Yeah. No, totally agree with that. Dan?
So just to clarify then, we've got the questions that are in the scoping paper, obviously the discussion that we've had tonight, I'll include those as some sort of general sort of questions, get feedback from that, and then we'll finalise a version which needs to go.
Just get people to add anything else.
Yes,
they want.
Yes,
absolutely.
I think that's probably going to get a better response than just asking for them.
Like you say, piece of blank paper. Yeah. Councillor Beach.
I'm really sorry. I've never done this before. This is the first time I've ever got this far in a review to like doing questions and surveys and whatnot. The questions for the councillors. Obviously, we are half of the councillors, and we're choosing the questions we're going to ask of the entire council. Do we extend that beyond ESBC council? Was Station Street not a bit of a collaborative project? Was the county council not involved? I'm only asking, like, generally for my information. I don't know what's the done thing. Like, Councillor Jones is absolutely nailing this. Like, all the scoping questions are really good. They're all transferable. And I just don't know how it's done, generally. And I just want a bit more information so my brain can create it in my head.
If you want a cynical response, I wouldn't bother going any further than all the councillors, to be honest. I mean, if you're going to ask the county councillors, you've only got a couple, and a couple of those are borough councillors anyway. And if experience is anything to go by, you'll be lucky to get 25% response from our current councillors. You'd be really lucky to get 25% from our councillors. That would be going really well, and that would be everybody in this room and all the other members of the committee responding. And that's not me being totally cynical. Just realistic. You guys know that's true. And I'll switch.
You guys know that's true.
Okay.
So we choose the questions that we're asking.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. If you know the answers as well, put that in. Okay then, Dan. So just to reiterate then, Dan will send that email out over the next couple of days. If you can get those questions back for us, then hopefully before the end of next week, Dan can collaborate those with and work with his team to then make sure that that survey goes live on all our social network platforms, as well as the website and E&S News. So then we're going to look probably 3 to 4 weeks to receive those responses back. I think, you know, maybe reminder emails to certain quarters, i.e. councillors, might be advisable. I know we'll push them from our end. But then hopefully we're going to have some good responses back for the next meeting on the 19th of December. Okay, and I think we're also going to be bringing back Tom and the leader of the Borough Council for a Q&A session. All right, is everybody happy that we move forward with that strategy so far? I'll take that silence as golden. Yep, all right then. So I'll move on to item number 8, which is the public executive decision records. Are there any questions with regard to those? You've all received copies. No questions? No? All right then. Move on to question number 9. Questions. To receive any questions submitted by any member of the committee for answer by the leader, deputy leader or officer of the council. Questions should have been in by the 27th of September. I've not received any questions. Monica? No? And obviously then the item number 10 is the date of the next meeting is the 19th of December. I will then move into private while Monica switches off the recording. Just to note, the press and public are likely to be excluded from this meeting during the following item of business, and is likely that there will be discussion of exempt information as described in Schedule 12A of the Local Government Act 1972, set out in full with this agenda on the Council's website, the appropriate paragraph or paragraphs of which are noted in brackets before the agenda item.